From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, February 15th, 2018. And on this day, what's ahead for Downey's correctional facility? The legislature's making moves to keep funding it, but that may not be enough to keep it open. And another Aroostook County town decides to end the potato harvest break. Those stories in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
President Trump, members of Congress, and state lawmakers were quick to react to the 18th school shooting this year, this time at a high school in Parkland, Florida. Maine's congressional delegation has also responded, but as Steve Missler reports, mass shooting survivors are asking for a lot more than thoughts and prayers from state and federal lawmakers.
Each tweet from Maine's member of Congress contained a variant of the word horrific to a shooting that reportedly killed 17 people and injured 15 others after the gunman moved through the school wearing a gas mask and firing an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. Independent Senator Angus King tweeted that such tragedies should not become normal. But normalization of mass shootings is already happening, according to the survivors of the 10th deadliest school shooting in U.S. history.
They knew what to do, we knew what to do, and even still, even with that, we still have 17, you know, casualties, 17 people that aren't going to return to their families, and to me, that's totally unacceptable.
Melissa Falkowski is a teacher at Marjorie Stoneham Douglas High School. In an interview with CNN, Falkowski said she hid in a closet with 19 other students during the shooting. It's what she and other faculty had been trained to do in drills, drills that have become common in schools across the country. Falkowski says those drills are not enough.
And from my personal viewpoint, it's time for Congress, government, somebody to do something, and it's time to talk about what the problem is and try to fix it.
My message to lawmakers in Congress is please take action. Ideas are great. Ideas are wonderful, and they help you get reelected and everything.
David Hogg is a senior at the high school. He was in environmental science class when the shooting started. Now, he's a school shooting survivor, an unwilling bystander to the 41st mass shooting this year. Mass shootings have already claimed 82 lives this year and 590 last year.
What we really need is action, because we can say, yes, we're going to do all these things, thoughts and prayers. What we need more than that is action. Please, this is the 18th one this year. That's unacceptable. We're children. You guys, are the adults.
Maine Public Radio asked each member of the congressional delegation to respond to the calls for action. None was available for an interview, but Democratic U.S. Representative Shelley Pingree forwarded bills she sponsored, including ones that expand background checks and close loopholes. In a statement, she said, quote, "I'm ashamed to be in a Congress that continues to sit on its hands while these tragedies and our constituents demand swift action." Senator King's office did not respond to the request by airtime, but Republican Senator Susan Collins outlined proposals that she supports during a press conference in Washington. Among them, strengthening background checks, alerting the FBI when someone on the no-fly list tries to buy a gun, and eliminating straw purchases that can put guns in the hands of people who can't clear current background checks.
Those are three very practical steps that we can and should take and that are overdue.
In a statement, Republican Congressman Bruce Poliquin said Congress can pass as many restrictions on the Second Amendment as it wants, but none of that, he said, will, quote, prevent bad people from doing bad things. Poliquin also echoed President Trump's focus on mental illness. Last year, President Trump repealed a rule that required the Social Security Administration to identify certain mentally disabled beneficiaries to a federal agency that conducts background checks. But on Thursday, he highlighted mental illness as a key component in mass shootings.
We are committed to working with state and local leaders to help secure our schools and tackle the difficult issue of mental health.
The National Rifle Association has led the effort to defeat bills that would restrict access to guns. It spent nearly $11.5 million to help Trump in 2016 and over $200,000 in Poliquin's reelection race. While there's a robust debate over whether gun restrictions would have any effect on mass shootings, such proposals are often a third rail for Republicans and Democrats. shortly before airtime, only two of the nearly two dozen candidates running for governor had released an unsolicited statement on the Florida shootings. One of them is a former sheriff, State Senator Mark Dion, a Democrat from Portland. Dion sponsored a bill 4 years ago that would have tightened rules around the unauthorized sale and transfer of firearms. Governor Paul LePage opposed it, and the Democratic-controlled legislature sustained the governor's veto. Dion said it's time to revisit the issue. He said thoughts and prayers are, quote, not enough and never will be. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The state Senate, on a vote of 31-3, says it wants to keep the Downey's Correctional Facility in Washington County open for another year. But the margin of support in the House was less than what's needed to override the expected veto of the bill by Governor LePage, who abruptly closed the prison last week. Mal Leary has details.
The governor's action to close DCF is generating anger among Democrats and some Republicans at the State House, especially since lawmakers voted last year to fund it through June 30th. During debate on the Senate floor Thursday, members of both parties questioned the legality of LePage's actions. Senator Roger Cates is a Republican from Augusta.
There is no delegation of any authority to the executive branch to be able to decommission that facility. It is only the legislature which can do that. It is only the legislature which can close that facility.
Cates and other senators from both parties argued the governor exceeded his authority, something that is also now the subject of a separate court case. And Senator Troy Jackson, a Democrat from Allegash, wondered what else may be on the governor's agenda to bypass the legislature.
This has already been decided. There shouldn't have been a 4:30 raid on a Friday morning to go and take that all away. I mean, what else is going to happen? What's next?
But just down the hall, House Republicans, 57 in all, opposed the bill to continue operating Downey's Correctional Facility for another year at a cost of $5 million. Norway Republican Tom Windsor is a member of the Appropriations Committee. He says it's wrong to bypass the normal appropriations process and fund the correctional facility piecemeal.
I object to that because, you know, this is one bill of many. In fact, we have somewhere around $200 million worth of bills that have already passed the two bodies and is sitting on the special appropriations table.
In the normal appropriations process, lawmakers decide spending priorities based on how much money is available. Windsor says there are many bills, such as additional pay for direct care workers, that should be considered at the end of the session, not now. Republican Representative Ellie Espling from New Gloucester argued that the facility needs significant repairs to be used as even a minimum security prison. And she points out the legislature has recognized the need to close the facility by not providing the money for needed improvements.
To keep putting this off year after year is not helping. We need to do the right thing now. I know it's not easy. Sometimes doing the right thing is difficult.
But supporters of the funding bill argue the LePage administration has not lived up to a two-year-old agreement to build a new pre-release facility in Washington County. So this week, Senator Joyce Maker, a Republican from Calais, got the green light from legislative leaders to submit a bill directing the construction of the pre-release center.
We're only trying to do what was promised us. In the bond issue that we voted on, there was supposed to be a pre-release center. It's been dragged on. Nothing has happened.
That bill has yet to be scheduled for a public hearing. Meanwhile, the closing of the facility by the governor is the subject of a lawsuit brought by the county commissioners of Washington County, and a preliminary agreement has been reached to stop any dismantlement of the Downey's Correctional Center until the court case is decided. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
A unique school tradition will come to an end in one Aroostook County town next year. Last night, the school board for SAD 1 in Presque Isle voted to eliminate Harvest Break, a three-week period in the fall where students leave the classroom and help to harvest potatoes. In recent years, other towns have also gotten rid of the break, but as Robbie Feinberg reports, school officials expect the unusual practice will continue in a few places.
The SAD1 school board has spent much of the past 2 months debating the value of harvest break. They heard from farmers who said it provided valuable short-term labor and taught kids job skills. But they also heard from parents like Frank Bemis, who said the three-week layoff interrupts student learning and can make childcare a headache.
And we find it to be a struggle to manage the kids on these off-kilter schedules. Things are a little different for that.
A recent survey from the district found that only about 15% of Presque Isle High School students contributed to harvest work in 2017. Superintendent Brian Carpenter says the low number played a role in the decision to eliminate harvest break. Carpenter also says the move should save the district money on transportation and by consolidating teachers' schedules.
Originally, it was $55,000 that we looked at as just on the surface savings.
The board's decision also allows students to participate in harvest break if they choose. They'll just need to make up the work they missed.
So although we didn't vote harvest down, we effectively made it so that it's not going to be a usable tool.
Brandon Roop is a farmer and school board member who says the new policy could leave farmers searching for help in a market where it's already hard to find agricultural workers.
You know, they're resourceful. I'm sure they'll come up with something, but as far as a labor force, it's not out there.
The district's decision comes only a few years after school districts in Holton and Hodgdon also eliminated harvest break. The tradition continues in places like Caribou, Mars Hill, and Easton, where Roger Shaw is the school superintendent.
To eliminate the harvest break and expect students to go to work, to work for a farmer, that simply isn't realistic. That's not going to happen.
Shaw says in Easton, a large number of families are still dependent on agriculture. And he estimates that 40% of high schoolers work the harvest each year. That's more than double the number in Presque Isle. And Shaw believes doing the work helps students learn skills like perseverance that help lead to academic success. 2 years ago, the district had a 96% graduation rate.
We're a very strong academic school. Is the potato harvest break play a part in that? I couldn't say it does or doesn't, but it's part of the mix.
In Presque Isle, meanwhile, some questions still need to be answered. The biggest, says Superintendent Brian Carpenter, is figuring out scheduling. Surrounding districts send many of their students to Presque Isle's vocational center. Carpenter says if some of those schools are off for harvest break while Presque Isle is in session, that could mean some students miss weeks of class time. The new policy won't go into effect until 2019, however, and Carpenter says that should be plenty of time to figure those issues out. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, February 15th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.